Call the next case, please.
Case number 10-275, Mark West, Michigan Pipeline Company, versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Caldwell, Stigler, Spanish, and Fox.
May it please the court, I'm Charles Caldwell, appearing on behalf of petitioner Mark West Michigan Pipeline Company. I ask leave to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This case involves the FERC's regime for setting oil pipeline rates using the inflation index. That is the default mechanism for setting rates in front of the FERC for oil pipelines. Carriers can choose to charge less than the index, but that does not in and of itself reset the maximum ceiling rates set under that system. The Commission has denominated three specific exceptions for how the maximum ceiling rates can be adjusted. One is there can be a cost of service filing. The second one is a market-based rate application. And the third is the settlement rate exception, where there is a written agreement with all of the shippers using that rate. And it is under that third exception that the Commission and the orders below ruled. But Mark West submits does not fit the circumstances of this case.
Let me ask you something that's very fundamental, but it'd be very helpful to me. I thought what this case presented to us was trying to understand the terms of the settlement agreement and whether an agreement had been struck about what to do beyond the moratorium period, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that is an element.
If that's the case, why are we looking to the FERC regs?
Because there are two components, Your Honor, thank you. There are two components in which the Commission has departed in reaching its decision in altering what we would submit, the terms of the settlement, to extend it beyond its term. The Commission is relying upon its interpretation of both the agreement and of the regulation. So there's an element of the regulation.
No, it's doing that, but I get maybe this question is better directed to the FERC lawyers, but I'm just confused as to why we're looking at the regs if the touchstone of our inquiry is what did the parties agree to?
What the parties agreed to, Your Honor, let's go there. What the agreement provided was, first, with certain of the shippers, not all, and that's a crucial fact, mm-hmm. with certain of the shippers, and it's not in dispute, the carrier entered into an agreement to set both the initial rates mm-hmm. and then set a 3-year term during which the rates would be set at a level below that maximum ceiling that the FERC's methodology provides as the default. And so over that 3-year period, the rates were lower than the maximum ceiling. And at the expiration of the term, the carrier came in and filed the tariff filing. It's been rejected. The carrier said, we're going to take our rates up to the maximum ceiling. And under the Commission's regulations, that's a perfectly permissible thing to be done. There's no threshold for that. What the Commission said at that point was, we reject your filing. And they rejected it under their regulations, and they cited that third exception, the settlement rates exception, and said it applies here. But this is the regulatory point, Judge Griffith. The regulations require that to qualify as a settlement rate, right, it has to be an agreement of all the shippers, and it has to be in writing, and the carrier has to provide a verification that it has an agreement in writing with all of its shippers. The agreement here was not with all of the shippers. So it did not, on its face, meet the regulation the Commission cited as its basis for saying, we reject your filing. The Commission, so that's the regulatory aspect. As to the agreement itself, as I said, it was an agreement of less than all. It was an agreement to charge less than the maximum ceiling. But if you look to the agreement itself, the Commission's actions are inconsistent with the agreement on two grounds that are, I would say, quite straightforward. One is, if you look to section 2.04A2, that's the mechanism for determining these rate levels. It specifically references the FERC's maximum ceiling process and says we will continue to use that in setting the rates here. And what this specifically set up was that if over the course of that 3-year period, the FERC's maximum ceiling calculation, starting back with those initial rates, because of a negative adjustment, which does occur, happened just this past year, drives the rate down below the agreed adjustments in the settlement, then the adjusted rates have to go down. Well, the problem with that, Your Honor, is that the commission in its order said the maximum ceiling rates have been wiped out. The adjusted rates under the settlement are the maximum ceiling rates. So how can it be the case that there's some independent maximum ceiling calculated based off the FERC's index that is going to drive it down if tautologically they're the same thing? That is one of our difficulties with it. The second one is, by that ruling, by saying these are settlement rates under our regulation 342.4C, we say they aren't, but the commission believes they are. If that's the case, then having set the maximum ceiling based on that last July 2008 rate adjustment, that impact set a ceiling for the entirety of that year under the commission's regulations. The term of the settlement was to expire January 31st, 2009. But by that ruling, the commission extended the rate impact, the suppression of the rates, 5 months past the negotiated end of the rate agreement among the parties. Those two factors, both the going contrary to the rate mechanism itself and by this order extending the term of the agreement by 5 months, we believe perforce show that the commission's interpretation of the agreement is inaccurate and its application of its regulation, specifically the settlement rates exception, is inconsistent both with the language of its regulation and the language of the agreement which it had approved.
What did the commission say? I'm looking for it, but I'm not sure I have it. In response to your point that not all of the shippers had signed on.
Yes, Your Honor. The commission, I will say, offered three rationales for why this was acceptable. First, they offered, and I'll cite some specific points in their brief at page 19. They say that this is a technical requirement. I don't know what to do with a technical requirement here. I don't believe that saying it's technical says that somehow excuses the commission from not complying with its own regulations. The second one is on page 17 to 19 of the respondent's brief. The commission sprinkles the term uncontested in referring to the settlement agreement. And that's accurate. Those who were parties to the settlement agreement, which are not all shippers, did not contest it, and that set the standard for the commission's review of it. That does not equate to an agreement in writing with all shippers. It can't. The third major area, and obviously the commission can speak for itself, but the third major area that we detected, Your Honor, can be found at pages 23 to 24 of the respondent's brief. And what they talk about is they offer the inference, the implication, that somehow or another these agreed rates constituted something like a just and reasonable rate. They offer the reference to the fact that the commission in the orders below found the settlement agreement fair and reasonable. They reference the fact that the rates, the agreed rates, the settlement adjusted rates, were reasonable in the context of a litigated proceeding. Respectfully, that turns the facts here upside down and is inconsistent with the law. The just and reasonable standard is a statutory standard drawn from the Interstate Commerce Act, and it is a high standard. And it is not implicated here. This was a settlement under Rule 602. The standard under Rule 602 is that the agreement be fair, reasonable, and the public interest, and that is a lower standard.
That's an argument that's offered in defense of the, or to make the point that about where the ceiling rate is, not about the unanimity requirement.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I was trying. Perhaps I was a little bit too extensive.
You've given me two places in the commission's brief, but what do you understand to be in their order?
In their order, as well, they have suggested that their distinction is that the requirement of unanimity, that all the shippers agree, they tie to the fact that the rate exception, the settlement rate exception, looks to a rate increase. They infer that that's a rate increase above the maximum ceiling. We cite, Your Honor, and I believe I can come up with a brief cite if you give me a moment, but we believe that that's an inconsistent with Order 561, where that regulation was promulgated. The language there was May.
FERC interprets its regulation, the point four, those three methodologies, as dealing only with increasing the ceiling above what would have, what they would have arrived at through indexing. And they, FERC says point four is silent about the situation that we have, which is keeping it lower than what indexing would be.
Yes, Your Honor, that's accurate.
So your contention is that they're misinterpreting that regulation?
Yes, Your Honor. 561, which was where this was promulgated, talks about that those rate filings in the settlement rate context may involve increases. May doesn't mean will, and it doesn't exclude other possibilities. The other thing, Your Honor, I'll just offer, thinking about this in response to your question, is doesn't that go to the point, I realize that I've expanded, thank you, Your Honor, doesn't that really, just thinking out loud, go counter to the Commission's argument? What they have postulated in the situation is that the settlement rate exception, that enumerated item, is in fact a circumstance where you have unanimity because you are talking about a rate increase above the max ceiling.
Yeah, you would necessarily want everybody to agree to that if what you're doing is charging more than right. than you're otherwise entitled to. But if you're charging less, I don't know what's the rationale for saying everybody's got to agree to that.
And I would extend that a little further, Your Honor, and say, then what's the rationality for bringing this agreement, which has no reference to 342.4C, into 342.4C? The regulation that fits perfectly what happened in this situation is 342.3A, which says a carrier can always charge less than its maximum ceiling. And that's what this carrier did. This sets up a trap for the unwary, Your Honor. If a carrier, as it easily can do, enters into a private agreement with some or all of its shippers to charge less than its maximum ceiling rates, which is what happened, but just does it privately, the maximum ceiling would never be reset. But per these orders, if it made the mistake of submitting it under Rule 602, it's not required.
Do these regulations limit the contracts that the parties can make?
No, they don't, Your Honor. I mean, they have to be lawful, but it's a perfectly lawful agreement to agree with one or more of your shippers. I'm not going to charge my fully lawful maximum ceiling rate. But if you file under Rule 602, these orders say, gotcha, you have reset your maximum ceiling level down, no matter what your agreement may say. And if there are no further questions, I've used up my time.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Caldwell.
Good morning. Carol Lanza for the Commission. I think I can touch on several of the last few issues by starting with the tariff order at JA 65, paragraphs 5 and 6. This really is the core of what the Commission did. Interestingly, the petitioner didn't challenge this at all in the rehearing request, which made the rehearing order discussion perhaps a bit disjointed. But in paragraphs 5 and 6 of the first order, the tariff order, the Commission was looking at an unusual case. This is an unusual settlement. This was both initial rates and what comes in those first 3 years built into it. But and the Commission said, you know, we understand this doesn't meet the literal language, not only of 342.4C, which is what the petitioner now focuses on, but even on 342.2B, which is initial rates, which the petitioner focuses on the literal language of one regulation, but isn't bothered by the fact that the Commission found compliance with the purpose of 342.2B, where the literal language wasn't met there. Now, if the literal language in that statute means that this thing was never properly filed, I'm not sure where we go, because then they don't even have initial rates. So this is not separate. These were built in, and the Commission said, this is a settlement that had this in all along. This is the penultimate sentence in paragraph 5. Once the rates pursuant to the settlement were established and were unopposed, there was no need for any affidavits or other process as the settlement was implemented going forward, implemented each indexing season thereafter. So the Commission is dealing with an issue of first impression, a settlement that has both the initial rates and the first few inflation adjustments already provided for. And so the Commission sought a way to give effect.
You just presented this, I think, as though in paragraph 5 the Commission is excusing non-compliance with the affidavit requirement. Is that right?
In 5 and 6 together, it says, this is true. We don't have the affidavit under 342.4C, but the Commission, in the sentence I just read to you, said because we already have this settlement that is that has been filed, is unopposed, has all but, as far as we know, one shipper that we know nothing about except that it exists, or at least it existed as of July 1st, 2006. Well, there's nothing in the record to indicate whether there were other shippers in subsequent years. The only evidence of this mystery shipper who remains unnamed in the record is at JA 61, which says that as of the date the initial settlement was filed, there was some other shipper that was just not involved in this. But the commission said we've got three of the four. Now, the commission meant two of the three because Merit is a party that's interested but not actually a shipper. But we have all but apparently one on board with this, having signed on to this. No one opposes it. So we're going to say that it meets the literal, that it meets the requirement for initial rates, which it didn't technically, if we want to call it a technical requirement, didn't meet the technical requirement of that one either. But petitioner doesn't complain about that because they want to rely on those initial rates. So the commission said, we recognize we also don't have the affidavit for 342.4C, but we believe that this is still consistent with the regulations because, as it says in the last sentence of paragraph 5, it provides for a change in the rates with the support of all existing shippers, and we do have all but the one who hasn't spoken up in any way. And opinion 560, or order number 561, clearly encourages the setting of rates by agreement. Paragraph 6, the commission goes on to explain, you know, this is true, we understand this is not the literal language, but we think the broader purpose is served. A couple sentences later, it says the interesting feature of this case, I mean, this is an unusual kind of settlement that the commission was trying to grapple with that just didn't fit in the confines of what the commission had considered before. As I believe Judge Randolph, you were asking, in order 561, the commission had been looking at pipelines that came in and said, we want to set rates that are higher than this index if we can get people to agree to them, if we can get shippers to agree.
Can you go back to my fundamental question? And that is, if the touchstone of the analysis is what did the parties agree to, what role then do the regulations have in the interpretation of the settlement agreement? I'm missing that.
Right. It's not the regulations don't go to the interpretation of the settlement agreement. The settlement agreement goes to the application of the regs. And the two places
The settlement agreement goes to the application of the regs. Okay,
and I will explain that, but let me give you two sites where I think the commission is the clearest about that. In the rehearing order at paragraph 12 on JA 89 and paragraph 15, JA 91. And the focus here is on, again, it's not that the regs influence the settlement, it's the other way around. When we're looking at 342.3D5, which is under the 342.3 is indexing, D5 says when an initial rate or a rate changed by a method other than indexing takes effect during the index year, that's the ceiling level for that year. So what happens is
the parties can't contract away from that? Is that a limit on their ability to contract?
No, that's giving them the ability to contract, because this is saying that if nothing else is going on, if you had a rate from years back and you're just going along with your business, each year we let you take a generic inflation adjustment that's industry-wide, that's indexing. I know Your Honor's seen some of the indexing cases that we've had before that we're dealing with that, where there's a generic factor that applies to everyone that year. But if you file a cost of service case or a market-based case, or if you come to a settlement with someone to do something different with your rates in that year, then we look to D5 instead of the generically applicable ceilings. And that's what the commission is saying, that the initial rate that was put into place in 2006 had built in how we're going to treat. Actually, the interesting thing about the settlement agreement was that it built in inflation adjustments. I don't know if that's common, but it said, okay, you're going to take an annual inflation adjustment keyed to the indexing process that all the other pipelines are going through. But instead of taking the generically applicable ceiling, or I shouldn't say ceiling, the index that everyone else gets to use, which the commission puts out in May, you're going to use a different formula that's in the settlement agreement that is still based on the producer price index, but it's lower because it doesn't have some of the things in it that the commission would allow the pipelines to take. All of that is built into that first settlement about how you're going to do your inflation adjustment in years 1, 2, and 3. And the commission says that's a rate change by a method other than indexing, because it didn't take the ordinary index levels that would have applied. It had its own formula. It was its own thing. So having read the settlement agreement as saying, here's what your inflation adjustments are going to be, and they're going to be lower than the generic one, the commission said that fits under D5. That's what we're seeing under D5. You just set your ceiling for the year by the operation of that settlement rather than by operation of what would apply if nothing existed. I hope that makes sense.
Is it D5 that says there are three methods?
That's the next page, the next section, which is 342.4, which says other rate-changing methodologies.
And says there are how many?
Three. Cost of service rates, the market-based rates, and the settlement rates.
And so you're saying this isn't a settlement rate for that purpose?
No, what the commission said, and that goes back to where I started in paragraphs 5 and 6 in the tariff order, the commission said, we're construing this as being, this is consistent with what we're getting at in 342.4C, because we have this unusual situation where it's already built into the initial settlement. We don't have any opposition here. Going back to Order 561.
The commission seems to say that since nobody protested, everybody must have agreed. Therefore, we don't need an affidavit, and we don't need it to be in writing, although 4C requires it in writing, don't they?
Well, right. Well, of course.
Where does the commission, if at all, does the commission say that point 4 of the regulations deals, or 4C deals only with charging rates higher than the index would have set?
I think the commission didn't say that explicitly, but it did cite in footnote 10 on JA 65 to opinion 561, including order 561. This order says opinion. Order 561, and it cites specifically page 30,959. And if you look at that page, that's what we talked about in our brief, that the promulgation of 342.4C was directly in response to pipelines saying, if we can negotiate something higher, should be allowed to do it.
That may be, but the commission on JA 65, is it, in that last line of that paragraph, seems to say that point 4C applies, doesn't it?
It does. Well, what the commission is saying, and again, when you go to the first sentence of the next one, paragraph 6.
It says, moreover, section 342.4C provides for a change in existing rates with the support of all, et cetera, et cetera. If it doesn't apply when the rate is lower than the index, then why is the commission even mentioning it in the order?
Well, I'm not suggesting it doesn't apply. I didn't mean to suggest that. I was looking also at the next sentence, the first sentence in paragraph 6. The commission says, okay, this didn't meet the literal language of our regulation, but it fits the broader purpose. And our argument is that the commission looked at its regulation and said, this regulation never contemplated this scenario, but we think this fits the spirit of this regulation. The commission didn't use the word spirit. I shouldn't.
Well, it fits the purpose.
Yeah. Because here we have a situation, I have to admit that it's
not clear to me what the relevance of 4C is to this case anyway. I mean, if you're right that this is a change pursuant to another the rate is set by another method. Then who cares what the other method is?
We would be fine with that ruling as well. I mean, I agree with you.
The petitioner will explain his position, because I'm not really sure about it.
I agree, and I think what the commission was trying to do was just to make sense of a situation that it admittedly, I think, hadn't foreseen in 561, when pipelines were saying, if we can get all our shippers to sign on, let us charge more. Here you have a situation, what shipper's going to object to paying less? I mean, if you ask, qui bono, the pipelines agreement is the one that if you're looking sort of the flip side of what the commission was considering in 561.
Well, for one thing, the shipper who's not party to the settlement might object.
Well, it didn't.
I know, but that's who might object.
Would it object to paying a lower rate? I mean, it
no,
does.
No, to his competitors perhaps paying a lower rate.
Oh, but these rates are for everyone. Although the settlement was with these parties, these rates were tariffed. So that
okay,
shipper
so,
is benefiting
so the other shipper
from
gets the. So, okay. But if change here means increase, it doesn't mean decrease.
Right.
Okay. Which is what you're saying, basically. And therefore, the commission's the rest of the holding follows. Then, what do you do with the consequence that you are extending the terms of the settlement agreement beyond their expiration?
I'm glad you asked, because I did want to get to that issue. The answer is that we're not, because if you
well, the settlement says it expires in what, February or something
that's
like
right.
that. And you're saying, but you can't increase your rates until summer.
No, we're not saying that. We're saying, and according to the, going back to the regulation says you can't increase it under indexing until the next July 1st. That's 342.3C. The index year is the period from July 1st to June 30th. And when you read that together with 5, that says the settlement rate sets your ceiling for the year. That's just no matter what you had done with that rate effective July 1st, 2008, that was carrying to June 30th, 2009, just by operation of the regulation, having nothing to do with when the settlement
ended. So parties can't contract to have a rate lower than the permissible index for a period of less than the full reset year?
I don't want to say that they couldn't, because maybe if they were really explicit, I guess they could get around
well,
the regulation.
They set an expiration date, and the expiration date is meaningless. So it seems to me they were pretty explicit. They gave a date certain.
No, I have two responses to that. One is to be quite clear, and the commission said that any other kind of rate change, a cost of service case, a market-based case, or another settlement, any kind of change that's not based simply on indexing was fair game after January 30th, 2009. I know the petitioners had some question about that. I think the commission's first order was pretty clear, but in case it wasn't, it made it very clear in the second order. And they say, well, we didn't get a chance to make our filing. As far as I know, they still haven't made a cost of service filing. So I don't think they were robbed of any opportunity by not understanding that in...
So by that reasoning, would it have been open to the parties to have contracted for the settlement rate until February 1st, and then for the maximum permissible rate under the indexing?
I can't imagine why not. Yes. I think so. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just want to be clear. If you have 5 shippers and you reach an agreement with one of them to charge a particular rate, you have to charge that for all 5, right?
Well, it's a tariff. Yeah, I think if we start getting into side deals, we'd get into discrimination. And
right.
It's never been my understanding that we were talking about separate rates for separate shippers. And that goes to sort of what the commission was doing in Order 561 with the initial rate under 342.2. It said, you know, you file with the agreement of one shipper because you don't necessarily know who everyone else is going to be, but as long as you have a non-affiliated shipper, we're comfortable that you're coming up with something just and reasonable. And then in 342.4, the commission said, well, we want agreement of all shippers because, number one, you know who they are. The pipeline knows who its shippers are. I have no idea who this other shipper is or was, but somebody does. And if you want to charge something higher, you need everyone to be on board because they're giving something up. If it goes above the generically applicable ceiling, you need all your shippers to agree with that. And the commission said in Order 561, we're still concerned that you could be strong-arming people, but we're so in favor of settlements.
You think that's what it is? Because I'm trying to think of a situation where forget about 4C for the moment, that one shipper would say, oh, yes, charge us more.
Of an affiliate? Maybe. I mean, you're right, exactly. And that's why when the commission talked about what became this provision in 561, it was responding to pipelines saying we want to go higher, and the commission said, we're still concerned that you have negotiating power and you could be strong-arming people, but we're so in favor of settlement, and Congress in the Energy Policy Act of 1992 is so in favor of settlement, we'll let you do it as long as you swear that everybody agrees and that, and we'll let you get away with it.
Does that happen?
I assume so. I don't actually know cases. I assume that it's probably come up at some point, but I can't cite you anything.
So we don't know why all the shippers, or indeed any of the shippers, would agree to be charged more.
Oh, well,
the only example we have
be,
is where the shippers are agreeing to be charged less.
It would have to be a quid pro, it would have to be something for something. For instance, the way that I think the commission looked at the current settlement agreement, you know, the pipeline, as the commission understood it, the pipeline agreed to take less than the full inflation indexing for their first 3 years. But it's certainly fair to think that that the shippers agreed to the initial rate, whatever that rate was going to be. You know, there's a quid pro quo. They agree to the initial rate, but they say we're going to hold down its acceleration under inflation. So you can't say nobody got something out of that deal if it's both. So perhaps you could have, just hypothetically, a settlement with the shippers where the pipeline agrees to a starting rate that's really low, and the shippers agree to a higher escalation than inflation would allow for some reason that makes sense to the parties, something like that. If there are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, may I be heard briefly in rebuttal?
Please.
Thank you. A few points. If we're not under 342.4C, and I think Judge Randolph, you've noted that as an issue here, that doesn't lead to the orders here. 342.4 sets those circumstances, back to the regulations, Judge Griffith, that sets the circumstances in which the commission resets the maximum ceiling. The commission's made the point. It's like, well, 342.4C is about rate increases. This is a decrease. It doesn't fit under 342.4C. That is my client's argument. Where we are is not under that. We're not resetting the max ceiling. We're under 342.3A. We're setting the rates below the maximum ceiling.
What I'm struggling with is the connection that why is 3D5 dependent upon one of the three ways of changing in point four? Why is that so?
It's the structure of the regulations. If you look at
the regulations, you have to admit don't exactly say that. You're inferring it, I guess.
Your Honor, I would respectfully direct you to 342.1. It says each carrier subject to jurisdiction must establish initial rates under 342.2. B says must make any change in existing rates pursuant to 342.3 or 342.4. This is in our. It's in the back of.
Could you repeat?
Certainly. I direct you to 342.1, which is the general rule, the Commission's general rule. If you look at 342.1B. It says that the carrier, my client, must make any change in existing rates pursuant to 342.3 or 342.4. If you look at 342.3, that's the indexing system.
Let's assume that 342.4C was not satisfied, right? You're not claiming that you've been charging illegal rates, are you?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay.
We've been charging uniform rates under an agreement with some of our shippers that are below the maximum ceiling. What was a shock to my client was to be told we were actually operating under 342.4C and that we had, by this agreement, lowered our maximum ceiling rates. 342.1B says you're either operating under 342.3, indexing, which permits charging less than the index, or you're under 342.4, A, B, or C. The facts of this case don't meet any of the tests under 342.4, A, B, or C. So we're back under 342.3.
Well, 342.4C is the only one of 342.4 that could even be asserted or ever has.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct, Your Honor. So if we're under 342.3, that has a provision in subsection A for a carrier to charge less than the maximum ceiling rates, and it doesn't reset the maximum ceiling rates down as a result.
Which section has a provision for changing it without resetting?
If you look at 342.3A, right down there, just down the column we were looking at, Judge, it says A, rate changes. A rate charged by a carrier may be changed at any time to a level which does not exceed the ceiling level established by paragraph D of this section. Upon compliance, all I have to do is make a filing. That's what my client did. They made a filing that showed rates below the maximum ceiling.
That's a rate change other than indexing.
The distinction I would offer, Your Honor, is
I know exactly where we are, Your Honor, and I have a reference for that. If you look at the next page in the CFR, it says 342.4, other rate changing methodologies. The commission has specified in its regulation what those other rate changing methodologies are. And I don't believe there's a dispute between the commission and my client about that those are those methodologies. And those are the methodologies that result under D5 in a setting of what the ceiling is, of a resetting the ceiling. When you act, as I believe my client did, under 342.3A to just change your rate below the ceiling, it doesn't change the maximum ceiling.
That all turns on, your position versus the commission's, turns on whether changed means changed or changed means increases.
That's right, Your Honor. We would submit, we've covered this ground, and I apologize. Order 561 says may. I understand, and I don't dispute what Order 561 discusses. The discussion was higher. But the commission didn't make that clear in its regulation.
Is that portion of the order anywhere in the materials that you submitted? No, it's cited at page 65, but is it reproduced anywhere?
I don't recall, Your Honor, standing here.
What about
I don't
in
recall.
Your brief? You quoted it, I believe.
I would be happy if it would be of assistance to submit that as a 28J afterwards.
Well, we can get
if
that.
If you sit down, let me summarize your position so I'm sure I understand it. Number one, the rate that was in effect during the period in question here is a rate that was lower than indexing pursuant to not 4C but 43A.1. Point two is that 3A, when you set a rate lower than the index under 3A, 3D5 doesn't apply.
That's correct, Your Honor. If you'll indulge me one thing, to respond to the commission on the point that somehow my client knew they could have made another filing and mitigated harm, I would direct you to JA67, the last sentence of paragraph 9. Therefore, Mark West may not increase the rates at issue further before July 1, 2009, and its filing is rejected. Now, perhaps there was some uncertainty and some footnote that I missed there, but that's crystal clear what my client was told not to do, and that was to come in and do some other filing. And just for clarity of the record, because I made the filing, in fact, my client has filed for a cost of service increase that did it last year. And with that, thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate your indulgence. If there are no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Banta, thank you. Case is submitted.